Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. Artificial light or daylight?
Artificial light.
Design or functionality?
Design.
Australia or Indonesia?
Oh, that's difficult. I like both. Both has a very different things. Indonesia is very rich in culture, but it's very hectic, so many people. Australia is very calm, it's very quiet. So sometimes it's nice to have a place where you could just run away from the people.
Absolutely understand this. So let me introduce a little bit what we are talking about today. There is a sense of sacred and mysteriousness about them. Light and darkness are like yin and yang. There is no light without darkness and vice versa. It really is enchanting to think about how something so magical and intangible can also be very technical and tangible. Profession or vocation? A simple question for Rara Rina, whose father, a shadow puppet maker, laid the foundations for her fascination with the beauty of light and shadow in her early childhood. Her current approach embraces the idea of composing space and light through storytelling and emotional responses to the space in which her work and the viewer find themselves. Each space has a unique relationship with its architecture and the people who inhabit it. In today's podcast, we, Diane Slavic and Katharina Beatrice Wager, talk to Rara Rina from Studio Nimmersatt about the approaches and visual elements needed to complete the stories.
That sounds really beautiful, actually.
Rara Rina is a transdisciplinary lighting designer with 15 years of experience in Jakarta, Singapore, and Berlin. In 2019, Rina moved from Berlin to Bali. After working for 2 years as a freelance lighting consultant, in 2021, she founded Studio Nimmersatt. Rara, how do you pronounce your whole name? I think we heard that your whole entire name is a lot longer than we can actually pronounce.
My whole name, Raden Rara Rina Pratnya Pustika.
We'll stick to Rara, okay?
Okay, yeah, because my father's love is Hindus and Buddhism culture. So actually our name is taken from the Hindus culture. So it's more like a Hindus name. My father is really wants to be a puppet master a long time ago, but my grandma said become a puppet master doesn't give you enough money to live. So he became a doctor instead.
Oh, wow. Completely different.
Yeah.
So Rara, Studio Nimmersatt. Nimmersatt is the name of a very hungry caterpillar in a famous German children's book. So how did the very hungry caterpillar come to Bali?
So when I was working in Berlin, I went to this bookshop, Dussmannkaufhaus in Berlin, and I found this book, this very hungry caterpillar, Die kleine Raupe Nimmersatt. And I really love the books and all the characters and the way it tells, like, you know, like on Monday, the caterpillar eats something, one piece of apple or something. And then the Tuesday, they eat two pieces. And Wednesday, Thursday, they eat even more, like every day. And I thought when I moved to Bali and I want to found my studios, I want to found something with a name that is kind of like funny, but also have a meaning behind it. But I don't want to have a name of a studio with lighting or light or shine or something that really associated with lighting. So I thought, okay, maybe something funny that reminds me of being hungry all the time. So that's why I thought, okay, Studio Nimmersatt. Maybe that's fine. And also Nimmersatt, like if you put it in Indonesia, so my company name is Nomor Satu, which is mean number one. So if you pronounce it really fast, it's kind of like sound Nimmersatt, Nomor Satu, so quite similar.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I always love to do something that it's kind of fun. You know, like life is quite depressing sometimes, right? You have to work, you have a lot of things to do, and then why not doing something fun while doing the design and everything?
Absolutely. I think we're on the same page on that one. And I think there's no German-speaking child who does not know Nimasat, the caterpillar. We love it. We all loved it when we were children. Is there anything you and the caterpillar have in common, Rara? Are you also always hungry, or are you longing for new inspirations and call it hungry?
I think I'm always hungry. Like in general, I like to eat. So that's why when I thought, caterpillar is always hungry. It's quite fun. Like I always love to eat in general. But I think it's mostly, you know, like when we gain something or when we always want to learn something every day, and then you at least being transformed into something beautiful, like the very hungry caterpillar become a butterfly. Probably that's what's makes me feel I want to be that hungry caterpillar. You know, you always want to say yes to something new, because sometimes when you started to say, no, maybe it's too dangerous, or no, I don't really want to do that. And I think the same thing when I moved to Bali, I didn't know anybody because I was like away from the country for 10 years. So I have no idea how actually the construction happening in Indonesia. I didn't know how the role of lighting design happening in Bali. Basically, it's something very different and very new. And I just kind of like jump off the boat in a way, like try to do something new. And it's kind of scary.
And brave.
Yeah, we also grow quite fast in Bali because probably in the studio, we did things quite differently from other studios in Jakarta. I heard that quite often from the suppliers or distributors when they came to the studios, and they said like we did quite a lot of things fairly different from other consultants.
So how did you manage to find the right team around you?
Everyone is imported.
Yeah, of course, of course.
So in Bali, they don't really have a lighting consultant, right? So at the time when I moved to Bali, so 2019, we have so many beautiful resorts, hotels in Bali, beautiful villas, restaurants. But most of the project, they usually took consultants from Jakarta or from Singapore even, or from Thailand. But it's very rare, like a lighting consultant in Bali. So I think at the time, at 2019, there is one independent lighting consultant in Bali. And to get the team, it's very difficult because you don't have any other people that works in the same island. So you always have to try to roll in people from Jakarta or from other cities, like, hey, let's move to Bali. And for some people, probably it's nice to live in Bali, like a beautiful paradise. But for some of my teams, like we have quite a lot of changing of the team in the beginning. They are not used with the Bali lifestyle. They think it's a bit too slow compared to Jakarta lifestyle. So some person, they like to be in the city more. So we changed quite a lot in the beginning. But now I think team is quite solid. So some of them, they already been 3 years and some more like 2 years. So we have also seniors. They really want to be in Bali. That's why it's easier to roll them in to be in Bali.
So we would definitely prefer to work in Bali than in the rainy autumn season in Germany.
I know, right? It sounds very nice to live in Bali, but it's so surprising that not so many people want to live in Bali. And people around 30, so if you want to find a senior designer around 30, they usually already have a family in Indonesia. So it's even more difficult to bring someone senior to join in the company.
But we are happy that you were able to manage this. Always hungry is a good motto, but let's go back to your roots. Can you please tell us a little bit what fascinates you so much about this shadow puppetry?
I think it's probably when you saw it so often. So it's kind of like subconsciously inside your head all the time. So when I was a kid, my dad loved to watch a puppet shadows in the TV. And because I'm the oldest daughter in the house, so usually he always watch it alone. And I feel like a bit sad that he has to watch it alone. So I always come with him. And usually the puppet shadows is always around, you know, like midnight. And they last quite long. So probably when I saw that, I was like, oh, it's quite interesting, you know, and then you saw that quite often and then you just like suck in your head in a way. When I did my bachelor studies, so because my dad has quite huge collection of the puppet shadows, and he's really into the stories. And so doing my bachelor studies, I did the Puppet Shadow Museum as my last thesis. Then I started learning about lighting, but very, very early, like I don't know how to light up a museum. Like as an architect, usually you have completely zero knowledge about lighting. So I just try to find out myself. And I have a friend who's also really into lighting at the time. We share in the same place. So she teach me about lighting design. I think that's probably the starting point about light shadows and the lighting design.
You once said, "I believe that good light can influence our daily lives." Tell us about your work and what areas you work in, or which projects would you describe as your professional milestones?
I think when I was in Germany, right, it's very easy to do the lighting. It's so much different when I'm doing it myself in Bali, because most people, of course, in Germany, like some people still don't really care probably about lighting or about daylight, but it's very different when I started in Bali because the company is very small. So you don't get this big sophisticated project. So I started with a small project, and so many people don't realize that good lighting actually could affect or influence even your business or the way you behave. You know, like if you are eating in the restaurants, sometimes you feel like, oh, why is it so comfortable? But you don't understand why it's comfortable. Usually people understand better when it's not comfortable. So they could pointing out why it's uncomfortable. But some people don't understand why this place is nicer or you want to stay longer. So when I started in Bali, I started very beginning. So I have to kind of like show them. We always have in our concept presentation a teaching about what is a good lighting design, what is color rendering index, what is glare and how to avoid glare, what is color temperatures. We have so much samples also in the office. So instead of try to teach them by just using pictures, sometimes, you know, like I bring some samples, I show them, look, this is glare, you don't want to sit this too long, and this is non-glary places. You feel comfortable, you want to sit longer. Also about the color rendering, like your food suddenly looks better. Maybe you want to eat more. Maybe you become always hungry. So this is something kind of like a milestone of achievement in Bali, because you kind of like teach people, and some people, they were like really happy to know about that. Even we have one project that the GM invited some of the teams. Like, so I have to tell them theories about lighting design in front of the teams, so they all understand what is a good lighting, so they could spot it. Oh, like one of the lighting instead of warm white is cold colors that makes you feel you don't want to stay longer in that place. So that's probably the milestone.
I mean, everybody of us remembers like visiting, for example, restaurants and expecting good food. And then you have this cold neon light around you, like having almost no atmosphere. You feel like in a hospital. The food also tastes different, I would say. Like you cannot really enjoy it the way you could do it, or maybe you should do it. You were talking already about your beginning in Bali. You had to do some development work when you started your studio, as lighting design wasn't that known in Bali. But I think compared to Germany, there are also many opportunities, thinking about like maybe fewer rules, less bureaucracy, and above all, good craftsmanship and the ability to improvise. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, of course. I think that's one thing. You have these freedoms. And with freedoms comes creativity, I think, because when I was in Germany, you know, you want to do something and then, oh, you have these rules, you have this bureaucratic, and then you end up, let's just do something practical. In Bali, I think also with the architecture, with the design, and so many people that could do like really good craftsmanship. So it's very easy when you want to do something customized and your imagination like become very creative. And we have a lot of projects using bamboos also. That's something that very different for my other projects. So you have to think how to mount the lights in the bamboos, because in the bamboo, you cannot really drill them. So you kind of have to create the way how to hold them, how to wrap them in the bamboo. And sometimes when you are in the places with the bamboo, you don't want to see a luminaire. So you have to think how to hide them in the bamboo structures. And we also able to create a customization that probably in Germany it will cost a lot. But here we could create, okay, we want to combine it this way. So we have this project with Ibuku, one of the very famous bamboo architects in Bali. It's a restaurant. It's called Tembaga Restaurant, which means copper. So we created a pendant light. Previously, they already had something like that, but it's just a very simple light. So it doesn't really give enough lighting to the tables and to the areas. And I thought, instead of having a light that you bought from the suppliers, you know, something that very simple pendant, let's do something with the existing bamboo pendant that they have. And we try to modify them, like combining two lighting elements, the direct and indirect element, in a way you have light that punch down into the food and giving a proper lighting around the hallway, but also giving like a nice soft ambience into the restaurant. And they were really happy with that solution because they said that they hired somebody before and then the person just don't understand about integrating the bamboo architectures with something that very natural instead of a very factory made lighting. So this is something that in Bali we did quite often, and it's quite fun and stressful in the same time because you always have to trial and error. There is a good thing about using handmade, which means it can be very unique, but also means like each item probably will be different from one to another. So you have to kind of like tune in one of another.
That sounds beautiful. I mean, cost-wise, almost unimaginable in Germany.
Yeah, people are very skillful here. I think that's the good thing about it. They're very skillful with bamboos, with wood material, with natural materials. That I think that's the nice thing with copper, with brass. So this is something that honestly, I never done it before, like in Germany. So it's also like a learning curve from my side with the artists.
Yeah, but you just said in the beginning, you're always hungry. So there we go.
Yeah.
But you worked for so many years in Germany or Europe, where like completely different technologies like DALI and KNX are the standard. How difficult was it to rebuild the network in Bali? Like, are you still working a lot with these kind of technologies?
We do, yes. I think almost 80% of our project are using control system. Yeah, and surprisingly, some of the project is the first time they're using DALI. So we have one lighting control manufacturers and then they said, oh, I never used this DALI before. So we even have to study, like, is your brand actually supporting DALI or not? Because he said they never did it. And the MEP, the installer, most of them, they never knows about DALI, about KNX. Some people knows about the old technology, like the rotary dimmer, fast dim. And everybody, when they associate it about lighting, is always about bulb. So most of the question from the people are, how can I change this if it's dead? You know, because they always think maybe after 3 months, you have to change the bulb straight away. And so this is something that's very new. But I think it's also because when I started, my project is not a very high profile project. So it's kind of like a medium project. But in a way, I don't want to left them out. So I want to still try to introduce that there is this technology that we could apply. So even though nobody ever used it before, let's try it together. So it's a bit of a headache in the beginning. I learn a lot because I have to know the technology myself. I think I learn a lot more when I'm in Bali than when I was in Germany. Like in Germany, everybody knows what DALI is. Everybody knows what KNX. They know how to do this installation. They know how to do the programming. So I kind of like a bit ignorant not to learn about the programs. But in Bali, because nobody knows, so I'm the only one that answering that question. So I have to study this even further. And actually, the support mostly come from Jakarta because that's where all the big manufacturers are. But it's very helpful. And I teach the MEP to do that. So we have one good connection finally with one of the MEP installers where he learn from knowing nothing about control system. No, he knows everything.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and so you're not only integrating like a skill in Bali, such as the lighting planning, but also new technologies. So actually, you should be a pioneer in Indonesia.
I think it's nice to share about this knowledge to people around and make everybody kind of like live up together. And this is what we believe also in the studios. We always more like solving problems together and learning. One of my team said, he come from one of the consultants in Jakarta. He said mostly the consultant in Jakarta, they always bring the suppliers to support them in the site. So they don't really learn about that. But I think in the studios, because we are in Bali and you don't get the support directly from the suppliers in Jakarta, so we have to be the one who knows everything.
I think for lighting designers, the topic of designing for people is kind of a currency. What strategies do you use to find ideas and also initiate new processes?
Walking on the beach.
That sounds really nice.
Some projects, we did the design discussion together. That's also something that it's not always my ideas, always somebody else's ideas. And then we kind of like try to make it better. I think in Bali, you have a lot of inspiration. In one project, I just went to the restaurants and then somebody have like these nice sculptures and integrating like fairly simple. And then you and I did the project, why don't we do it this way? But instead of integrating like simple bulbs, let's do something that it's a bit more new technology. I think that's how we always try to find an idea. It's like you see something that's kind of being built very simple, very old, and let's put the new technology into it and make it more up to date.
But then again, how do you manage to arouse emotions and seduce without forgetting the functional aspects? I think that is something like a mix, right? You work with a lot in Indonesia.
Yeah, I think mine is more the function. So I have my partner, William. He's an artist, which also kind of like help infuse that emotional aspect. So sometimes I'm more like the practical way, look, this has to be maintained. This has to be like this. And then we have him as the artist. It needs to look good. It needs to trigger emotion. When people see it, they feel happy, you know, or maybe we need the color light, or maybe the housing of the things is colored. So something in the project, usually we always try to find, we need to find one part that is the fun in the project, something that makes people, that looks nice, like all triggering their emotion or memories. And 80% of the part is probably the practicality, the functionality. So it's kind of like a mix between that. I think we argue a lot in the studios too. So I think that's like what's triggering the emotion, you know, like you said something A and then the others come like, yeah, but I've done this before in this and then it doesn't feel nice. I think that's what makes the design feels very different also on every project.
It's always a process. I don't think that the result is always the same like you had it designed at the very beginning.
No, of course. Sometimes even like someone's in the teams come up with an idea and then I just said, but that's hard to do, like hard to maintain. And then let's not doing it that way. And then we present another idea, which is more simple to the client. And then the client said, I want not this way, the other way. And then I said, my team actually have that idea, but we scrapped this out. So we have to bring the other ideas.
We were talking at the beginning already about Indonesia and Australia. So you do have offices in Bali and Melbourne. Where are you physically at the moment?
It's not in Melbourne. It is in Perth, actually, in Western Australia. Yeah. I'm physically at the moment in Bali. Last time when Eva have a call with me, I was in Perth for a month. I think we just want to try to get the Asia Pacific market. That's the hope. That's the dream. hopefully it's happening. But being in Bali is very different with Perth. It's just sometimes you feel energetic with these vibes of a lot of people and so many cultures, so many different ceremonies all the time. And I think I appreciate the Balinese people for having that. Like, they still hold that culture very deeply. And this is something that also affect us, you know, like every day. Usually people just work all the time. So being in Bali kind of like reminds you that there is something else to life and that you could also not working all the time. But sometimes I went to Australia just to escape also that hecticness, you know, the feeling of too many people.
Would you say that the clients in Indonesia or Bali are more open-minded than in Australia? Or what is your experience?
Actually, it's the other way around.
Oh, really?
Yes. But it's not all typical. Some of Indonesian clients, they have a very wild, open-minded ideas. Some of Indonesian clients, they just, you know, like, I've done it like this. Let's do it this way. So also the same, but in Australia, the Australians are more open into like new ideas, especially when they have a project in Bali. They open to like, let's play with crazy colors, you know, let's play with this integrating parties, secret party scenes. Well, the Indonesian, they're too afraid to, some of them are too afraid to step up into that outside boundaries.
What influences beyond architecture actually determine your work?
Walking at the beach.
And being hungry.
I think the fun. I think when we do a project, it has to be fun. It has to create something that when you do that, you have fun doing that. Even though from 100 projects, probably just 70% you have the fun and 30% you have all the suffering.
Yeah, but I think the suffering times are needed to enjoy the fun times more, no?
That's true, yes. Sometimes it's not even about the project. Sometimes it's more like the patience to be able to explain things to people. I think it's because we are too daring to introduce something that people not knowing before. You kind of like take a big responsibility, let's do it, but they don't know how to do it, so but let's do it anyway.
Yeah, I think you have such an inspiring influence to everyone you talk to.
It's probably because I'm kind of like, yeah, let's better doing it rather than regret it later.
We're coming to the end of our podcast recording, and I'm sure that also Katerina would agree on it. We could talk for hours with you because, first of all, it's really fun. It's very inspiring.
Charming.
And also very interesting.
Ah, thank you.
To learn more, you know, about working in different cultures. But at the end, we usually have one final personal question. If you had a year of free time, what would you work on?
That's quite a funny question because I moved to Bali because I want to have a free time. When I was in Berlin, I was so overwhelming with doing work and I thought I want to just get out from the country. And then I went to Bali for a holiday and I thought, oh, this is perfect. Such a nice place. It's warm. The food is good. You have a beach like really close by. So I packed my stuff and then I moved to Bali. I just don't want to do anything. I did that for 3 months and I think that's really not for me. You started getting anxious. You feel like you want to do something. So I could handle not doing something for 3 months, but not a year.
Okay, so you already had this experience.
Yes, I already had that experience.
That sounds good. But then let me know, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self?
Go to the beach earlier.
I think I would just say you are doing a good job. Keep going.
Rara, this was a really, really great journey of inspiration with you. Thanks a lot. And we and all of our listeners are undoubtedly longing for more. Thank you very much for taking the time.
No, thank you.
So it's a goodbye from us until the next episode of Jung Talks, Jung's Architecture Podcast.